And welcome to Krishna in Vrindavan. Right. So let's say our invocation song. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Hey, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahima. Rama, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 23, The Brahmin's Wives Blessed by Krishna. So what's happening here is that the cowherd boys are out and about. They're herding the cows and they're far from Vrindavan, they're far from home, and they're hungry, like little boys are hungry. But Jiva Goswami says that it's not actually that the cowherd boys were hungry, but they're actually feigning hunger because they're concerned that Krishna is hungry. So they're like, Krishna, we're so hungry. Let's find something to eat. Because they're thinking that actually Krishna is hungry and they want to make sure that Krishna is not hungry. So, yeah. They're thinking that if they say they're hungry, then Krishna and Balaram are going to make an arrangement and then they're going to eat too. And then they'll be happy that Krishna and Balaram got a nice lunch. So then Krishna and Balaram say, okay, well, there's... nearby, there's a place where the Brahmins are performing a big sacrifice. It's a big Karmakanda sacrifice. But for the sacrifice, they do so many offerings. They cook a lot of things and they offer things and there's prasadam. So he says, go there to that sacrificial arena. And those are very learned Brahmins. And it's described that these Brahmins are actually like very highly qualified Brahmins. They're not like slouches. They know the Vedas, you know, all the rituals. They're very careful, they're regulated, they're disciplined, you know, they're actually like Pakka Brahmins, as they say. And he says that these, but the trouble is that they're Karmakanda Brahmins. So that's what it says here in text three, that they're learned in Vedic injunctions and they're performing the Angirasa sacrifice to gain promotion to heaven. That's their goal. They want to get to heaven. But in any case, they're worshiping, I guess, does it say here? I won't speculate about it, but assuming that they're worshiping Lord Vishnu. Anyways, they're doing a yajna. So he says, go there and ask those Brahmins for some food. And the cowherd boys, he says, declare to them the name of my elder brother, Lord Balaram, and also my name, and explain that we've sent you. So Krishna's whole intention is that he knows, because he's Paramatma, he knows everybody's state of mind. So he knows that the wives of the Brahmins are very devoted to him. Although he has never like interacted with them personally, but the wives of the Brahmins, they always need things for the puja. So they always need, you know, flowers and fruits for offering and, you know, incense and different essential oils from the plants, from the forest. But the Brahmins' wives don't go to the forest themselves to get all these things because Brahmins' wives don't do that. They do all the backup stuff for the yajnas and the worship. So then there are these women that live in the forest, these Aboriginal tribal women. So we heard the story about the fruit vendor. Right, this lady that came with a basket full of fruits. So she was one of these, they're called the Pulindas, it's the name of the tribe that lives there in the forest outside of Vrindavan. So she was a Pulinda woman, that she has her basket, they go around in the morning, they get wild fruits off the trees, and then they just go to the village and, you know, they sell their fruits, they get a little, they exchange with rice or whatever, and then they have what they need. So like that, these Aboriginal tribal people live. So similarly, the tribal women used to come to the Brahmin's house with all kinds of fruits and flowers and things. And the Brahmin women would do some bartering system with them and get all the things that they need for their pujas from these ladies. And so, but these Pulindas, because they lived in the forest, they were in the perfect situation for watching Krishna's pastimes, because Krishna spent all day in the forest. So they were actually very fortunate, even though they're considered low born and all that, but they're right there and they're always seeing Krishna and watching him play and watching them eat. And sometimes they also might, offer things to them, like offer fruits that they had picked or something like that, or just leave things around in convenient places where they know the boys are going to find them and use them. So like this, they're always trying to serve Krishna. And then they see places where, you know, Krishna, the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, like they see Krishna's footprints and they take the dust from that place and they put it on their heads. So they love Krishna because they watch him, and Krishna is so lovable. He's so attractive. Everything he does is just so captivating. So it's like, that's their entertainment system, is just watching Krishna and the boys play. And desiring to do service. So that's why also fruits, is because he knew that she already had love for him, and she exhibited that by just giving him. When Krishna came out, he was just like, oh, this is the, then, you know, like she gave her. So like that. So these women, after watching Krishna play and seeing all his pastimes, then when they go to the Brahmins, so the ladies talk, you know, and so the Brahmins come to the door, the Brahmin ladies come, the wives of the Brahmins come to the door, and while they're doing the the business, while they're while she's buying flowers from the Pulinda woman, she's asking, well, you know, do you have any news? Because they didn't have newspapers in those days. They didn't have, all these ways of communicating that we have. So they would learn what's going on, locally from people who've seen it by talking. So these ladies, have you noted any news from the forest? Any news from, your side of the village or whatever like that? And so the ladies would be like, oh yeah, you'll never guess what happened yesterday in the forest. Krishna came with the boys and the cows, and this happened in the past time. And so every day they were eager to meet these women and hear about Krishna. So they're hearing about Krishna from the Pulinda women. And just like Rukmini, when she was in the palace, and different Brahmins and sadhus would come to visit her father, then he knew about Krishna. So he would say, oh, in your travels, did you happen to see Krishna? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I saw Krishna here and he did this. So Rukmini would hear about Krishna, and she fell in love with Krishna just by hearing about him. She never met him. And she decided, I'm marrying Krishna and no one else, just from hearing about him from the sadhus that he visited. So in the same way, these wives of the Brahmins, even though they're already married to these Brahmins, they would hear about Krishna and just become completely charmed by Krishna. And they literally like fell in love with Krishna. They had this conjugal attraction to Krishna. So Krishna knew that, and he wanted to reciprocate with their desire to have a relationship with him. So so he said, go there. And also, because the Brahmins, they were, materialistic, and they wanted to go to heaven, but at the same time they were Brahmins. And Krishna, we say, no, go Brahman Hitaya Cha. What is it? Namo Brahmanya Devaya, go Brahman Hitaya Cha. So Krishna is very kind to the Brahmins. He actually worships, he considers the Brahmins to be worshipable. So he wants to help these Brahmins, because after all, they are following Vedic injunctions. They are trying to be pious and do the right thing. They just are a little misguided. They kind of like got stuck on a lower step, and he wants to bump them up to a higher level of worship. And he's going to do this through the wives. So he sends the boys there, and they go there, and they stand there with folded hands, very respectfully. And they say, they really praise the Brahmins. They call them Bhumi Deva, oh, earthly gods. They say, they address the Brahmins like that. Please hear us. We coward boys are executing the orders of Krishna, and we've been sent here by Krishna and Balaram. We wish all good for you. Please acknowledge our arrival. So sweet. They're like, we're here. Please acknowledge our arrival. And then the Brahmins don't even acknowledge them. That's why they have to say, please acknowledge us, because they're standing there and they don't get acknowledged. So they're like, please look at us. We're here. We're trying to talk to you. And the Brahmins totally ignore them. They're just going about their business there. And so the boys continue anyway. They say, because they're remembering that Krishna said, say, ask in my name, ask in the name of me and Balaram. Then they might respond. They say, okay, that didn't work. Let's try saying Krishna and Balaram. They said, Lord Rama and Lord Achyuta are tending their cows not far from here. They're hungry and they want you to give them some food. So please, Brahmins, you're the best of the knowers of religion. If you have some faith, please give some food to them. So they're addressing them like that, that you know the principles of religion and dharma vitama, that's what it means. Oh, best knowers of the principles of you, out of all the people that know principles of religion, you're the best. So you must know that if someone comes to ask charity, you should give it.
How did they invoke Krishna and Balaram?
They just said Lord Krishna, Lord Ram and Lord Achyuta. Achyuta is another name for Krishna. So basically, they said that Krishna and Balaram are tending their cows near here, and they are hungry. So they asked us to come here. Yeah, Parta?
What was their understanding of God, the Brahmins?
The Brahmins? I'm not sure. I'm assuming, that's what I'm saying. Probably, like, generally in that area, everyone worshipped Vishnu. Even the Vrajvasis, like Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they all worship Vishnu.
So would they recognize these names? Krishna? They would be Jari.
That would be what?
Jari. Over here.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously don't understand that Krishna and Balaram are the supreme personalities of Godhead. But still, everybody likes Krishna and Balaram. You know, everybody has affection for Krishna and Balaram. So they're hoping that if they say Krishna and Balaram, then...
Do the wives know that, or are they just attracted by his awesomeness?
Well, we're going to find out. Okay. So, and also, the cowherd boys were smart. They also knew about these rituals a little bit. So they understood that the timing had to be right, because there's a time when they're engaged in the rituals and, you know, everything has to be done properly, the mantras, you can't interrupt that. But then they know that in this sacrifice, there's an interval there where, because these sacrifices go for long periods of time. Like, you know, the sages in Naimisharanya, they're doing 1,000-year sacrifice. So there are intervals in those sacrifices where the performers can take, they can eat, they can sleep. You know, that's all part of the yajna that goes there. So the boys knew that the interval in which it was allowed, says it was not contaminating for the partaking of food, was that time. So they approached at the right time, that now's the time when you're allowed to eat, so you can take a break and you can get food, you can eat, and you can also give food to us. And I was listening to the audiobook of Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and Kavi Karnapur was describing how the boys were there and they were hearing the Brahmins, like some of the Brahmins had already gone to eat. And you could hear from the house, you could hear them saying, oh, pass the rice, or this dal is so good, and all the sound of eating going on. So, like, he's hearing that they're eating, but they're just ignoring them. They won't give them anything. So it's just, like, really not good etiquette.
Wow. You weren't even engaged in the sacrifice.
Yeah. It was like a break. It was like intermission kind of thing. And they were eating. So... Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying, you know the principles of religion. Why are you just ignoring us? Because they're Karmakandis and they're thinking, oh, these useless little boys, don't disturb us. They were proud. They were proud of of being Brahmins and thinking that they're better than the Vaishyas. These are just little kids, like useless kids playing in the field.
Do you have a Brahmin to give charity? From a material perspective.
Yeah. Well, that's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it says the Kauravas were not unaware of the formalities of Vedic culture, but their intention. Okay. So then the Brahmins heard this supplication from the lords, and they refused to pay heed. It says, indeed, they were full of petty desires and entangled in elaborate rituals. Though presuming themselves advanced in Vedic learning, they were actually inexperienced fools. So Shukadeva Goswami says. So, yeah. It's like that verse from the Bhagavad Gita that says, Kamais taista rita jnana, something they... anyways, it means that when someone's afflicted by lust, by material desires, so many material desires, then they worship the demigods. And that their intelligence is stolen away by their material desires. So because these Brahmins, their intelligence was stolen by their material desires, they just didn't know how to act. They couldn't even follow their own Brahmin Dharma. Yeah. So that's what happened. And it says here, exactly. It says that the Brahmins saw Lord Krishna as an ordinary human because of their perverted intelligence. They failed to recognize that he's the supreme absolute truth, and thus bewildered by their false identification with the mortal body, they did not show him proper respect. So these Brahmins, they were really... So then the Brahmins, they didn't say anything. They just ignored the Kauravas. They didn't say yes. They didn't say no. They didn't give him the time of day. And so the boys were disappointed, and they just said, okay, well, whatever, that didn't work. They went back to Krishna and Balaram, and they told the whole story. And then Krishna just laughed because he knew. He knew this was going to happen. And then he told the Kauravas boys, well, you know, when you go to ask charity, sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. It's nothing to get too upset about. Like, don't worry. Just go back and ask the wives now. Ask those Brahmins' wives. And certainly they're going to give you all the food you want because they're very affectionate towards me. And he says, with their intelligence, he says, they will certainly give you all the food you want, for they are most affectionate toward me. And indeed, with their intelligence, reside in me alone. So yeah, so they're very intelligent, and very intelligently, they reside in Krishna alone, which means that they've fully taken shelter of Krishna. By dint of their Krishna consciousness, they're always kind of living with Krishna in their minds. So then the Cowherd boys go back, and the Brahmin, they go into the actual, they just sort of like, they slip past where the Brahmins are, and they go into the inner chambers where the ladies are. I guess because they're small boys, they can get away with that. So they go right in there, and the ladies are there, and they're like, respectable ladies, we've come on behalf of Krishna and Balaram to ask for some food. So those ladies, as soon as they heard the name of Krishna, they just became so ecstatic. They were like, oh, Krishna? Oh my God, you're from Krishna? Yeah, you have food for Krishna? And so they got ecstatic, like their hair was standing on end, and they became stunned. So then they were just like, before that, they were like, yes, yes, we'll get everything, you know, whatever you have, whatever you want, we'll provide. But then they started trying to do things, and they just got like so ecstatic that they became stunned, and they couldn't do anything. So then the boys were like, well, aren't you going to give it? And then the ladies didn't say anything, like, oh my God, it's the same thing. We asked the Cowherd men, and they didn't say anything. They were just like stunned statues for all intents and purposes. And now we asked their wives, and they actually said they're going to give, and now they're just standing there like statues too, totally ignoring us. So they're like really confused, like, oh my God, are we ever going to get this food or not? But then finally, they kind of like, you know, came back to their external senses, and they're just like, okay, let's get the food. So then they're really excited, and they're getting all the food together. It says four kinds of food full of fine tastes and aromas. And all the ladies went forth to meet their beloved Krishna, just as rivers flow towards the sea. So, yeah. And their husbands were they were just busy doing their stuff, doing the yagya or doing stuff with the yagya or eating. And it says that some of them tried to stop, that some of them saw and they were trying to stop the ladies. That's what it says here. Although their husbands, brothers, sons, other relatives tried to forbid them from going, their hope of seeing Krishna, cultivated by extensive hearing of his transcendental qualities, won out. Along the river Yamuna, within a garden decorated with buds of Ashoka trees, they caught sight of him. So then, yeah, so they just went. The husbands were trying to stop them, but they just plowed past them and nobody could stop them. So then they went there with the cowherd boys, and then there they saw Krishna. And he was sitting there beside the Yamuna in this beautiful garden with Ashoka trees. It's a very auspicious tree. And it was just the springtime. So the buds were forming on the trees and it was very beautiful. And Krishna was just strolling with the cowherd boys along the bank of the Yamuna, just kind of walking along casually and waiting for the boys to come back with the food. And so there's this nice description of Krishna. Krishna's complexion was dark blue and his garment golden. Wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, sprigs of flower buds, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves, he was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. He rested one hand upon the shoulder of a friend, and with the other he twirled a lotus. Lilies graced his ears. His hair hung down over his cheeks, and his lotus-like face was smiling. It's a very sweet image of Krishna, right? He's just like, he's got one arm like over the friend's shoulder and the other arm just like relaxed, twirling the lotus between his fingers. And so these ladies, can you imagine? It's like they'd been hearing all this about Krishna. They were totally like in a state of rapture about Krishna already. And now they're seeing him for the first time in that beautiful scene, lovely garden, spring flowers blooming. He's totally just relaxed with his friends. And so it says, for a long time, those Brahmin ladies had heard about Krishna, their beloved, and their mood towards Krishna was just like a paramour. So they had this conjugal attraction, but they're married to these Brahmins. So, but they wanted to relate with Krishna like a paramour.
How old
were they? The Brahmins' wives? I know, it makes it seem like they're kind of like older than him, right?
Yeah. I always thought it was super old.
Yeah, no, they're not old, they're young.
But what happened to them when they saw Krishna? Because when they heard about Krishna, they got stunned.
Like, what was their reaction when they saw? Let's see, okay, let's see. I mean, even Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, they're all married. The ladies would get married very young those days. So, okay. Okay, let's see. They'd heard about him a long time, and his glories had become the constant ornaments of their ears. Amongst themselves, they'd be always talking about Krishna. Indeed, their minds were always absorbed in him. Through the apertures of their eyes, they now forced him to enter within their hearts, and then they embraced him within for a long time. In this way, they finally gave up the pain of separation from him, just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing their innermost consciousness. So, they're just looking at him. They're just like drinking his beautiful form with their eyes, and it's going to their hearts. And within their hearts, they're embracing him for a long time.
These girls, are they part of that crew?
Which crew? No. They might be the same age, but they're like different. They're like not in the same group.
How many groups of gopis were there?
There's lots of groups of gopis. Mm. I don't know about numbers, but there's a lot of them.
Like they have their own, I guess, pastime.
Yeah, they meet with Krishna at different times, different places. Yeah. Okay, so then Lord Krishna, who witnesses the thoughts of all creatures, understood how those ladies had abandoned all worldly hopes and come there simply to see him. Thus he addressed them as follows with a smile on his face. So yeah, because when they left home, it was like they left their husbands. And like when a woman just walks away from their husband like that to go see another man, that's it. Like in her mind, bye. That's it. It's final. Like she's not coming back. She can't come back because like she knows that generally speaking, the husband's not going to accept her back. like if a wife is unfaithful, she goes off and, you know, has some relationship with another man, she's not going to come, he's not going to allow her back to the home. So they basically, when they went, that was a big thing. It wasn't just like, okay, we'll be right back, we're just going to go give some food to Krishna. No, it was like, in their minds, it was like, we are in love with Krishna, we're going to be with Krishna forever, and, you know, we're not going to see you, any of you again. So Krishna understood that they had come with that in their minds, like complete surrender, like given up all their worldly duties and relationships and just dedicate themselves to him. So he was smiling. And he says, "Welcome, O most fortunate ladies. Please sit down and make yourselves comfortable. What can I do for you? That you have come here to see me is most appropriate." That you've just given up your husbands and left your homes and come here to see, most appropriate. This is so cool. So yeah. Yeah. So yeah, why is it appropriate? Because it says here in the purport, the ladies had rejected their husband's orders, but their behavior was not at all inappropriate because their husbands had tried to obstruct their service to Krishna. So when the husband tries to obstruct the wife's service to Krishna, then it's appropriate for them to reject the husband's orders, because the duty of the soul is to serve Krishna. So what's that?
Does the same thing go for a guru?
Yeah. If your guru is telling you don't serve Krishna, just like, you know, whatever, serve me or something.
Yeah,
like Ramanujan.
What's that? Like Ramanujan.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Shukracharya. He was like, he told Balaraj, don't give charity to Vamanadev because he's the Supreme Personality of God. He's going to take everything. And then Balaraj was like, wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to give everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Isn't that like the whole point? And then Shukracharya says, but because he's thinking, oh, because if Bali gives everything to Vamanadev, he's not going to have anything left to give to me. That's his whole like inner thing. So then Bali Maharaj is like, I'm sorry, I can't follow your order. He rejected Shukracharya and said, I'm giving everything to this Vamanadev. Like that. So, yeah, good example. Thank you. Then he says, certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interest render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly to me, for I am most dear to the soul. So he appreciated that these Brahmins' wives were so intelligent. They had understood their real self-interest as souls, and that their duty was to surrender to him and serve him. It is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than oneself? So he's saying, yeah, it's only because of their relationship. Like, you know, we love our children and our friends and our parents and all that because they're extensions of ourself. That's why people love their own children more than other people's children, even though other people's children may be better behaved, more beautiful, whatever, right? But still, you're going to love your children more, even if they're like obnoxious brats, just because they're yours, just because they're like born from your body. So then, but he's making the point that anyways, because he is the actual self, you know, that we're all parts and parcels of Krishna. So actually the real object of love is Krishna. So our to know our real self-interests is to know that we should serve Krishna, because he's like more closely related to ourself than anybody. Yeah. So it says here in the purport. He says, but then, so they go there, they give them the food, they leave everything there at his lotus feet, which is a lot of food, enough for Krishna and all the boys to eat to their full satisfaction. And Krishna speaks these sweet words to them. And then he says, now you should return to the sacrificial arena because your husbands, those learned Brahmins, are householders and they need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifices. He's like, it's very nice that you've come here, and given the food, and you've come to see me, and that you're so devoted to me that you've given all these things up, but you know, you need to go home now. And so the wives of the Brahmins say, "Oh, Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words." So it's just like we're going to hear soon in the chapters of when Krishna plays his flute and calls the gopis to the rasa dance. They, you know, leave their husbands behind similarly, and they go into the forest in the dead of night, and they find him, and they go there, and he says, "Oh, why have you come here? It's late, you know, it's dark, the forest is a dangerous place, you should go home." And the gopis are just like, "Don't say that. Why are you saying that? What's wrong with you?" So the wives of the Brahmins are saying the same thing. And they say, they put him on the spot. They say, "Don't speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees." Mm-hmm. You say that, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, because these are Brahmins' wives. They know the Bhagavad Gita. They know the scriptures. They know that the Lord says, "Yeyatamam prapadyante tam tataya bhajamyaham." As you surrender unto me, I reciprocate accordingly. So we've come here because we love you and we want to have a conjugal relationship with you. You can't just send us home to those men, ordinary men, who aren't even devotees. Like, what are you talking about? So they say, "Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships." Like, we've given up everything. We just want to, now that we've come here, we just want to stay with you forever. And just whatever remnants you leave behind, you know, your discarded garlands or your remnants of your food, whatever, we're happy to just live on that, whatever you leave over. So, yeah. Then Vishwa Chakravitaka gives some insight here. He says that Lord Krishna might have pointed out to the Brahmanis, "You young ladies are members of the aristocratic Brahmin community, so how can you surrender at the feet of a mere coward boy?" You know, like, you're Brahmins, and Brahmins can't have a relationship with, like, a Brahmin woman can't have a relationship with a lower Varna male. So you can't have, you know, "I'm a Vaishya, you're Brahmins. This is a kolam, Patiloma. This is, like, not going to work." Then the ladies might have said, "Since we have already surrendered at your lotus feet, and since we desire to become your servants, we are obviously not maintaining a false identification as members of the so-called Brahmin community. You can easily ascertain this from our words." Like, don't you get it? Don't you get it? We don't identify with as being Brahmins anymore. We have transcended the Varnashram Dharma. That doesn't apply to us anymore. We are only your servants. So don't give us the Brahmin thing. Then Lord Krishna might have replied, "I'm a cowherd boy, and my proper maidservants and girlfriends are the cowherd girls, the gopis." So the wives say, "True, let them be so. Let them shine forth if you are embarrassed in front of your relatives to make Brahmin ladies your maidservants. We certainly don't want to embarrass you. We will not go to your village, but will rather remain in the forest of Vrindavan, like the presiding deities of the forest. We simply desire to perfect our lives by even a slight trace of connection with you." So they're like, yeah, I mean, obviously, socially speaking, it's natural that you, a cowherd boy, are going to be have a relationship with cowherd girls. Everybody's expecting that. We don't want to embarrass you, so we're not going to go to your village. We're not going to, you know, people aren't going to have anything to talk about. No scandal. We're going to stay in the forest. And we're just going to live in the forest and wait for you to come to the forest to herd your cows. And we're going to meet you there in the forest. And then that's going to be our relationship. All good. So, yeah. After that, Krishna doesn't know what to say. And the dialogue finishes. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur. Okay, wait. No, there's another thing. If the Lord had then asked, "Then what will your family members say?" They would have, the Brahmanis would have replied, "We have already transcended our so-called relatives because we are seeing you, the Supreme Lord." So it's like those prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right? That you are my father, you are my mother, you are my husband, you are my son. Everything you are. So.
Can you imagine saying that confidently? "I've transcended all this. I'm here for you."
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? And then they go on. So now we're back to the verses in verse 30. Our husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, other relatives and friends will anyways no longer take us back. And how could anyone else be willing to give us shelter? Therefore, since we have thrown ourselves at your lotus feet and have no other destination, please, O chastiser of the enemies, grant our desire. So they're thinking, anyway, if we go home, they're just going to reject us. And then we're going to be homeless. We're going to have no shelter, no one to protect us. So you have to come here. The Supreme Personality, then Krishna says, rest assured that your husbands will not be inimical toward you, nor will your fathers, brothers, sons, or relatives, or the general populace. I will personally advise them of the situation. Indeed, even the demigods will express their approval. So it's not that Krishna goes there and tells the Brahmins, look, you guys, you got to take them. Because the Brahmins, they don't respect Krishna. They wouldn't even give food, right? So, but Krishna's in the heart as the Paramatma. And so he's going to inspire the Brahmins from within to accept their wives back. And he's from within the heart, Krishna can do all of his stuff so that everybody accepts them. He says, for you to remain in my bodily association would certainly not please people in this world, nor would it be the best way for you to increase your love for me. So this is the main thing, that this would not be the best way for you to increase your love for me. Rather, you should fix your minds on me and very soon you will achieve me. So this is, he's telling them that their love and devotion for him will increase most efficiently in separation. And so it'd be best for them to go. And he says this also, he says, this is a very profound statement, which applies to us also. It is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories that love for me develops. So Krishna is telling us how love for him develops through these processes. And then he says, not by physical proximity. Therefore, please go to your homes. So just being with Krishna is not how one comes to love Krishna, but by hearing about him, seeing the deity, thinking about him, chanting his names and glories. So it's kind of like we were hearing a lot similar to this yesterday with Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day, that you know, about Vani is more important than Vapu. It's not by physical association with Srila Prabhupada that the devotees became strong devotees, developed deep love for Srila Prabhupada, but it was by serving his instructions, by, you know, hearing from him and meditating on him and serving him. So same thing with Krishna. So here we are, we're not in Krishna's physical proximity, but we have all kinds of facility, unlimited facility to hear about Krishna, to see the deity, to think of Krishna, and to chant his holy name, his names and glories. We can do that 24/7. And it's by that that our love develops. Yeah, Prata?
I know they say that it's not different hearing and being with him. Is there a difference?
I mean, there's a difference in the experience, but you can't say which one is better. Krishna's saying here that it's better to be apart from him. All right, Shukadeva Goswami says, so then the wives of the Brahmins, they went back. They went back to the place of sacrifice, and the Brahmins were fine. They just accepted their wives back. The wives continued to assist them, and they finished the sacrifice. And then, there was one lady that actually, she got stopped by her husband. Her husband like just physically grabbed hold of her and put her in the house and locked the door, and she couldn't go. So when the other ladies came back and told her about seeing Krishna and how Krishna talked to them, how beautiful he was and how amazing the whole experience was, she just meditated on their words, and she got an image of Krishna in her mind. And in her heart, she just embraced that image of Krishna, and she left her body. So that was actually the most fortunate of all the women, because she immediately took birth in a way that she could be with Krishna. Whereas the other ones, had to stay with their husbands. Which shows that separation is the most fortunate position. So they're saying that how Krishna, he accepted the food, he fed the cowherd boys, and then he ate. And then they're also saying how he descends to perform his pastimes. So they're telling all this. And then they're saying this to their husbands. to, you're saying to the husbands and to that lady that was left behind. So that one just like immediately attained a spiritual body and went to join Krishna in his pastimes. And then, yeah, it's not that she took material, but she just got an eternal spiritual body and went and joined Krishna. And then the husbands were hearing all about this because the wives are saying, Bhagavan Api Govindas. This Govinda is Bhagavan. He's the Supreme Personality of God. He's the one that's giving the results of all the sacrifices and austerities and all of your rituals that you're doing. It's all for him. And he has appeared just like a human being to perform his pastimes. And thus he imitates the ways of normal human society, but he's actually the Lord. So when they speak like this with so much conviction, then the Brahmins come to their senses and they feel really remorseful. And they think, this is what they think, we have sinned, for we have denied the request of the two lords of the universe, who deceptively appeared as ordinary human beings. So they're feeling terrible. They're just like, oh my God, we are really, really, you know, losers. We had a chance to personally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we just totally ignored them. But they were inspired by their wives' devotion. At that point, they began to appreciate their wives' devotion for Krishna. And they really, comparing themselves to their wives, they're like, you are wonderful devotees. You are really exalted devotees, and you have true love for the Lord. And we are just total schmucks. We're just totally materially absorbed. And we have no devotion. We didn't even have knowledge. We consider ourselves Brahmins, but we didn't even have knowledge. We didn't even know who was God. We didn't know Krishna was God. So they're just like condemning themselves. And this is what they say. To hell with our threefold birth, our vow of celibacy, and our extensive learning. To hell with our aristocratic background and our expertise in the rituals of sacrifice. These are all condemned because we were inimical to the transcendental personality of Godhead. So they're really like feeling it. So threefold birth means first the physical birth, then the brahminical initiation, and then there's another initiation, which is like initiates them into performing these Vedic sacrifices. But they're saying it was all useless because we were ignorant of the absolute truth that Krishna is God. He says, the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord certainly bewilders even the great mystics, what to speak of us. As Brahmins, we are supposed to be spiritual masters of all classes of men, yet we have been bewildered by about our own real interest. And then they appreciate their wives. Just see the unlimited love these women have developed for Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the entire universe. This love has broken for them the bonds of death, their attachment to family life. So they're actually glorifying their wives for having left them, because they're understanding these women are detached. They're detached from family life. That's very hard to be detached, you know, especially for a woman to be detached from family life. So the Brahmins, they take their wives to be their gurus. So it says here that therefore from that day on, the husbands accepted those ladies as their worshipable spiritual masters and no longer thought of them as their wives or property. He says, these women have never undergone the purificatory rites of the twice-born classes, nor have they lived as brahmacharis in the ashram of a spiritual master, nor have they executed austerity, speculated on the nature of the self, followed the formalities of cleanliness, or engaged in pious rituals. Nevertheless, they have firm devotion to Lord Krishna, whose glories are chanted by the exalted hymns of the Vedas, and who is the supreme master of all masters of mystic power. We, on the other hand, have no such devotion for the Lord, although we have executed all these processes. It's almost finished. I'll read this. Indeed, infatuated as we are with our household affairs, we have deviated completely from the real aim of our life. But now just see how the Lord, through the words of these simple cowherd boys, has reminded us of the ultimate destination of all true transcendentalists. So Krishna is so expertly, you know, he this pastime to satisfy the desires of the Brahmins' wives and also to bring these Brahmins to a state of higher realization. Then he says, hoping for the touch of his lotus feet, the goddess of fortune perpetually worships him alone, Krishna, leaving aside all others and renouncing her pride and fickleness. That he begs is certainly astonishing to everyone. So, yeah, so they're saying this, Krishna is amazing because he's the husband of all these goddesses of fortune. And the goddesses of fortune, they're always worshiping him. And yet Krishna is coming to our doorstep like a beggar. Like, so, yeah. Then they realize that, yeah, that Krishna is actually the, all the opulences of the sacrifice, all the opulences of their learning are all just manifestations of Krishna, of Krishna's opulences. Even though we heard that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, the Lord of all mystic controllers, had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty, we were so foolish that we could not recognize Sri Krishna to be none other than him. So yeah, so there was this, because Gargamuni had said that, you know, and the Brahmins also, they study the scriptures. So in the scriptures, it foretells Krishna's appearance, that the Lord Vishnu will appear in the Yadu dynasty. So they have read that, but they didn't put two and two together that this was Krishna, that he appeared in the Yadu dynasty and now he's here doing these amazing things in Vrindavan, and they just didn't like get it. So now they're like, okay, now we understood this is Krishna. Let us offer obeisances unto Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His intelligence is never bewildered, whereas we, confused by his power of illusion, are simply wandering about on the path of fruitive work. We were bewildered by Lord Krishna's illusory potency and thus could not understand his influence as the original personality of Godhead. Now we hope you will kindly forgive our offense. So they're very remorseful. They're asking for Krishna's forgiveness. And now they became very eager to see Krishna. They thought, our wives are so fortunate they went to see Krishna. We also want to see Krishna. But then they're not as qualified as the wives, because the wives were totally fearless. And it says here, but being afraid of King Kamsa, they did not dare to go to Vraj, because they lived nearby. You know, the cowherd boys just walk there. So they could similarly just walk over to the village of Vrindavan and go knock on the door of Nandamaraj. And being Brahmins, Nandamaraj would have invited them in, sat them down, fed them, probably engaged Krishna in serving them prasadam. So, but they were afraid of Kamsa, because that was part of the thing, that Vishnu would appear, but that Kamsa would be always wanting to kill him, because they were living in Kamsa's, you know, kingdom. They were afraid of the king. But yeah, it says that.
Maybe the air purified from that.
From what?
Being separated and the personality.
Yeah, I'm sure they got purified because they were feeling separation. Yeah. So that's the story of how the Brahmins' wives were blessed, and the Brahmins were also blessed. Everybody was blessed, and the cowherd boys and Krishna and Balaram also got a good lunch. So it was a win-win-win. In Krishna's pastimes, everybody always wins. All right, it's 7:30, so we better. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, the Brahmins' wives ki jai, Brahmins becoming intelligent ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.